Now I'm going to ask you to consider this thought. Suppose that in your previous lifespan, you had attained the mystical consciousness. And then because of it, you had been able to lift your future parent up into a state of consciousness that would receive inner impartation and eventually give birth to a form which would be called you, but without the usual period of human consciousness dominating that form, so that as Mary was able to receive impartation from he who would become her son and give birth to a child through an unconditioned consciousness. So let us say that you were able to accomplish that from your last lifespan into this one. You would have then come upon a world in which you would look out not from a human consciousness. You would eventually, at the theoretical age of 12, recapture your mystical consciousness from the last span. You would show forth some early precociousness, and then ultimately you would look out upon the world and you would not recognize things that human beings recognize. For one thing, you wouldn't recognize death. It wouldn't have any meaning to you because, having attained the mystical consciousness of life and knowing life has no opposite, death to you would be no more than the shadow, like somebody walking out of sunshine into shadow, never thinking for a moment the sun has gone anywhere. I've simply walked out of the sunshine into the shadow, and death would be that to you, just a mere shadow, and you would know that life is present. You would look out at sin and disease and lack and limitation, but you would be unable to recognize them as human beings do. They would have no meaning for you, because in your mystical consciousness you would know that all that life is, I am. There's nothing lacking in life, and my name is life, not form. That would be your mystical consciousness. And then you would proceed in what is called this lifespan, and you would show forth the qualities of life instead of the qualities of a divided consciousness. Now, it's rather strange that these things were known to the ancients, but have escaped us for some thousands of years. And we find many places in the Bible which are not understandable until you have caught the meaning of a life that is never broken or terminated, or even begun. When you have caught the one life of yourself, of your neighbor, of all who walk the earth, then you're in that unbroken consciousness of the one life that doesn't stop with a lifespan or begin with a lifespan. And then your own everywhere self is not just a self that you think of in terms of space, but in time. For instance, your everywhere self is everywhere now. But because of the limited radius of your own consciousness, you can just be aware of that self to the degree of your consciousness. You can see certain things, become conscious of them that way, and you're aware of them. What you cannot see, you're unconscious of. What you can touch, you're conscious of. What you cannot touch, you're unconscious of. And so we continue in this vein until we discover that although God is unlimited consciousness, we coming into the form of a lifespan become limited consciousness. And we only know within the radius of what we can see, touch, or perhaps hear about from others. The actual experience of an infinite self is something we take by hearsay, or perhaps by faith, but never by experience, until we begin to step out of the confines of reason, the prison of reason, the prison of believing only what I see, touch, hear, and am willing to accept. We begin to get this word consciousness and to see that consciousness is what man has been calling God. And God doesn't die. Consciousness doesn't die. And just as I here as a human being am conscious, I must give God that privilege. I must see that God is conscious here. And the consciousness of God here will be quite different than mine. God isn't limited to my five senses. Divine consciousness does not limit itself to what I can see. But it is present. It is omnipresent. And because divine consciousness is present here, it, being conscious of the fullness of itself, when I can be one with that divine consciousness, then my human sense of consciousness is lifted up beyond its own limitations. And I can become conscious of what the divine consciousness knows. Then I'm in the one. Now, divine consciousness knows no death. I do because in my limited consciousness, I'm like a ship. Above is the sky. Ahead, the sky meets the water. Behind me is the water meeting the sky, and so I have horizons in front of me and behind me. And let's suppose that the horizon was 100 miles away. After a while, I would reach that place, which had been 100 miles away, and I would discover that the horizon is still 100 miles away. And after another 100 miles, that horizon which had been in front of me would now be behind me. But it's still there. The water is still there. The sky is still there. I've merely moved through it. It remains. I have moved through another lifespan, but where is it? It was only a horizon. The horizon ahead, I will come up to someday, and then I will pass it, and when I look back, I won't see it, but it will be there. There is not a single lifespan you have had that doesn't still exist. There is not a single lifespan you will have that doesn't exist now. And to stand in your everywhere self in time is to look back, to look forward, and to recognize that only in my limited human consciousness am I under the belief of this birth here and this death there. If I could touch that divine consciousness, which is life without beginning or end, and become aware of the lifespans before and the lifespans ahead, and then take away those false horizons, relax in the one life without a span, without a beginning, without terminating points, without an end, and recognize that one life now and accept it. In all time and in all space. And then I begin to feel the meaning of being one with the divine consciousness, being fed from above, not being limited to a five-sense mind, not living only by the bread of the senses, but by the word that proceedeth out of the divine consciousness. Then I can feel again that when I am told in the beginning was the word, I am being told that in the beginning was my everywhere self. And it was with God. And it was God. And it is a light that has shined in the darkness. I'm relaxing now like a baby sitting on its mother's knee, accepting one infinite divine self as my everywhere self. The baby doesn't tell the mother what it wants. It doesn't specify. It's completely content, joyous, comfortable, needing nothing. Why? Because there is mother love there. Unspoken mother love. And as you rest in your divine self, you find that you're sitting on the knee of the Father. As you rest in your divine self, you find there's absolutely nothing to ask for. All that I have is thine. The only reason a lack had appeared was the limited human sense of things, the personal sense of things. And the miracle of your own everywhere presence becomes the provider for all of your needs. Now, this is the magic of grace. The old way was an individual seeking and striving to attain. The new way brought by the Master was the message of grace as you rest in your everywhere self. The miracle of grace is that no one has to make it happen. It is the acceptance of my kingdom has come. My kingdom has ever been present. My kingdom is the only begotten Son. The one infinite child of the Father is my everywhere self. Now there's a time in the Bible where the earliest stages of this understanding was brought, and I think it's probably the first argument in the Bible between Judaism and Christianity. It's after the Master has cleansed the temple, changed water to wine, and now he's on his way from the banks of the Jordan to Judea. And it is said here that they baptize now. There's a new kind of baptism introduced into the world. After these things came Jesus and his disciples into the land of Judea. And there he tarried with them and baptized. That should be clarified. He didn't baptize. You'll find again in chapter 4, in parentheses, though Jesus himself baptized not, but his disciples. So this means here the same. They tarried in Judea, and his disciples baptized. Now, outwardly, this would just appear that Jesus and his disciples are starting some new system. A new kind of baptism. And so we must examine the old and the new, and we find the old way of baptizing was the outer man. immersion in water of the outer man. Now, this new way at first might seem somewhat similar, but it's going to be baptism of the inner man. And now it isn't performed by John. It's performed by the disciples of Jesus. And it isn't performed on the west bank of the Jordan. It's performed in Judea, on the other side of the Jordan. And the point, of course, is the difference between the material and the spiritual. The departure from Jordan for the new baptism is the departure from the material way of the outer cleansing to the inner cleansing by fire. And at first, it's just the truth that is the baptism. It's not the fire of baptism. And so it's now still the disciples doing the baptism. They're teaching a new truth. That's the new baptism for them. But you'll notice that the Jews bring this to the attention of John. There's a fellow out there, and he's doing a lot of baptizing. And they're rather jealous because they're dedicated disciples of John the Baptist. But John doesn't seem to mind in the slightest. He's very glad, in fact, that the kingdom of God is come on earth. And so he explains to them that there's nothing can come to a man except from above, from heaven. And we ought to take the word heaven to mean within. We ought to take the word above to mean within. And this new baptism from above, from within, is not simply the quietness of meditation and contemplation. It is leading to the awareness that I am not a separate individual walking this earth, waiting to be cleansed of my sins, but rather, in this temporary appearance of mortality, something else exists. The new baptism introduced here, the departure from the old to the new, is signified by the dispute, the questioning of the intellect, which is expressed by the Jews saying, "What is this new thing you're doing? We purify with the water." And this intellectual, this rigidity which would remain in the old way of humanhood, is the symbol used for the Jew. It is a symbol of that self in us which wishes to remain in the letter of the truth. And as this self of us dies, the new self is risen from the baptism of the withinness, the heaven, the spirit. And this becomes the departure from Judaism to Christianity in its highest sense. Not speaking of persons, but speaking of the tendencies in a man. The tendency to the letter, the tendency to the spirit. And so the new baptism becomes the awareness of a new self. Not just the cleansing of the old self, that wasn't enough, but rather the rebirth from the belief in an old self into the awareness of a new self. And this new self that we become aware of is the self that pre-existed the form. You can wash the form all day, it means nothing. It's but a symbol The new baptism from above is the awareness of that self which pre-existed the form, which knows no lifespan, which doesn't live from horizon to horizon, which is independent of material senses, which never becomes mortal. And so the changeover in baptism was from the mortal self which was being cleansed in the Jordan to the first miracle of knowing that immortal self which is the self of all. The disciples were still unaware of this. Something was in the wind for them. But what it was, they did not yet know. They had not yet been baptized by the Spirit. And so they were still baptizing with truth, but not the truth of the fire of Spirit. They had to receive that later. But this new kind of baptism was a preparation. The water of Spirit. The water of truth. Spiritual truth, released in consciousness, was the purifying agent, preparing them for the ultimate baptism, the realization of that everywhere self. Your everywhere self is the self referred to in the Bible when it says the Father so loved the world that he gave it his only begotten Son. His only begotten Son is yourself. Not your limited self, not your time capsule, not the shell, not the form, not the person, but the self you're coming to know through the inner baptism, which has never stopped being yourself. Now, as we live in that self, consciously accepting it, releasing ourselves to it, permitting it to govern us, we begin to understand this divine image and likeness in which we were formed. Your consciousness is the consciousness of God individualized. Your unawareness of it becomes your human consciousness. But when the mist of human consciousness has been overcome and your individual divine consciousness shows through, you find that the divine image and likeness in which you were formed begins to manifest itself in various expressions which have no fear, no limitation, no doubt, no animosities, no resentments. Everywhere along the line, a new kind of inner love begins to manifest. It's not a love that a human being is capable of. It's a love that only the divine consciousness can shine through. Now, because we are the divine image and likeness of the Father, not born 60 years ago, but the only begotten eternally, it should be clear that divine consciousness formed us before the womb, before the lifespan, and that it formed us as an instrument for itself, so that each appearing human is invisibly an instrument of the divine consciousness. And unless the human steps aside to let the invisible self be an instrument of the divine, we are blocking and barricading that divine expression of being which is unlimited, which is free. And we are bottling ourselves up in the prison of the mind. Now let's look at some places which tell us about our own pre-existence. They're very interesting when you begin to see them from the light of one consciousness. Now first we're going to look at Proverbs. You may have seen this before, perhaps now you'll see it in a different way. This is the 12th Proverb, 28th verse. In the way of righteousness is life. That's a strange statement. In the way of righteousness is life. Now they're talking about spiritual righteousness. In other words, knowing your spiritual identity, living in the one divine consciousness instead of the mental limitation is righteousness. And that is life. In other words, divine consciousness living itself through you, Christ living your life, is life. And in the pathway thereof, there is no death. In the mystical consciousness, the awareness of self everywhere, there is no death. In the 139th Psalm, here's verse 14 through 18, and look at this. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. My substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret, and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being imperfect, and in thy book all my numbers were written. This is all about pre-existence, which in continuance were fashioned when as yet there was none of them. How precious are thy thoughts unto me, O God. This growing awareness here that before I appeared in the womb, I existed as a self. Isaiah, a very fascinating remark on this subject. And this is the 66th chapter, which is probably his last chapter here. The 7th verse begins as follows. Before she travailed, she brought forth. Before her pain came, she was delivered of a man-child. You see the subtle method of presenting pre-existence to us? Who hath heard such a thing? Who hath seen such things? Shall the earth be made to bring forth in one day? Or shall a matron... Shall a nation be born at once? For as soon as Zion travailed, she brought forth her children. The invisible spiritual self is present before the form appears in the womb. It is necessary in the rebirth to spirit to become aware of that self through your inner baptism. Now God has no opposite. The divine self has no opposite. That is all that exists. The hypnotism of the senses, which make us sleep to our own divinity, make us walk in garments of flesh, that are terminated at certain dates make us think in minds that cannot see reality. All of this is the second baptism. Coming out of this shroud of unreality. And the willingness to trust beyond your own mentality was not possible before because we were unaware of our own everywhere self. You weren't willing to give up because you had nowhere to go. Now you're not being even told to trust in God. It's not that nebulous. The world has trusted in God, but has found out that they haven't found God in spite of their trust. The missing link was always the Christ, the only begotten self, the everywhere self of us. You're told to trust in you, in your own full being, in the wholeness of self. Now, you have found that even a head cold can throw you into a state of confusion, or a piece of machinery goes wrong. And here you thought all the time you were in the truth, and that was your protection against these little human disturbances. And it is the protection. But when they happen, we go berserk. We forget everything we knew in that moment. All of a sudden, hypnosis hits us like a ton of bricks. So that instead of standing on the reality of being right then, and accepting that God has no opposite, and accepting that the presence is always present, we look at this piece of machinery or this head cold or whatever it is, and we begin to try to figure out ways and means of getting rid of it. Always believing it's there. And all we're doing is living out from a lifespan instead of from a life. Living out from life, you will find that the head cold is just a little Red Sea that parts, the temporary break in some sequence of machinery is a little Red Sea that parts. Whatever it is that's besetting you, big or small, it's happening in a lifespan, not in a life. There is never in life any imperfection, because life and God are one and the same. But when you know that life and you are one and the same, then you're out of the broken consciousness, the lifespan consciousness with a beginning and an end, and you're reunited with the one consciousness, the source of all things. You're not confused by mental energy, which comes to us as the appearances called things. You're not confused by the fact that mental energy sometimes works and sometimes doesn't, or sometimes appears to be harmonious and other times it seems to be distorted. You're not living in that level of life. You're out of human consciousness, and you're in the divine consciousness. You're letting yourself be lifted above. Now let's take your head cold. It's a very annoying little thing. It could just as well be something more catastrophic than that, and the difference would be the same. They're both a separation from the divine consciousness. That's what we suffer from, a separation from the divine consciousness. And as we rest in the mind trying to figure it all out, we're not getting any better, for the simple reason that the mind is the separation from the divine consciousness. Grace isn't going to function in that mind. In the stillness of it, in the acceptance that there is a self here, not a transient, not a temporary, not a limited, not made of mortal flesh, a self that is life. That's what's here. It's beyond the horizon of my senses, but it's here. And it's the child of God. And it's myself. And it doesn't have a head cold. And it doesn't have diseases. And it doesn't know death. And with my human mind, I will never know that self. Now I'm going to live in that self. And as you do, you'll find that whatever comes to you is trying to take you out of that self. It's trying to bring you back into a sense of mortality, into a temporary self, into a lifespan. And you simply never have been in a lifespan in your reality. You are always an eternal life. The consciousness of that eternal life is the consciousness that is coming across this earth now. That is the consciousness that you and I are beginning to feel, to know, to live in, to experience. A life which never began and never ends, is always continuous, and is always expressing that which is the Father. Even the mind, the reasoning power, can see that God doesn't destroy, that God builds nothing that destroys, that God, being ever-present, is our guarantee of the ever-presence of divine life, without opposite. You've never seen a sickness. You've seen your belief in sickness. There is no sickness. You've never seen a head cold. You've seen your belief in a head cold. You've never seen a dead or dying person. You've seen your belief. You were looking from a human consciousness. There simply is no such thing. There is only life being itself. And when you look at it from a fragmented human consciousness, you make all kinds of erroneous conclusions. Life is eternal. Life is always being life. Once we know this, we can be joyous about it. We can recognize that I will always be life. I may have to step out of this form if I get stagnant and get a new form, or I may step out of this form for a higher unfoldment. Either way, but there's no dead wood that can remain. And so in our new baptism, coming up to our everywhere life self, out of our lifespan conditioned mind, we find that the mind is losing these conditionings, these beliefs of yesterday. It's ultimately going to come to a place where the mother, during childbirth, will know the truth of being. That this that is appearing now is not a new life. indicated the life of God being made manifest through human sense. And that child will be born into the mystical consciousness. It will not know disease. It will not know limitation. It will not know or believe there is such a thing as death. It will be life conscious. And we are coming to that now, where we are life conscious. And we should be practicing that life consciousness on all things around us. Until the conditioning of yesterday, the beliefs in limitation, in human differences, in human superstitions, and all human lacks, all human imperfection, should be seen as nothing more than worldwide conditioning in its ignorance that life has no opposite, that life is divine, that life is never imperfect, that life is the invisible reality behind all visible things, and that you can live in life as life. Not speaking about it, but being it. And let the invisible become the accepted kingdom that has come. The government of God. My kingdom has come, and my kingdom is life, and that life is the light of all men. And whoever accepts that life is the begotten. The only begotten, because that life is the begotten spoken of in the Bible. Now, when we live in it consciously, we find that were a belief, the subtle serpent comes up against a new consciousness, a consciousness imbued with truth. And even at the subconscious levels that we do not know anything about, the truth of our being meets the lie of the world, and the light dissolves the darkness even before it surfaces into manifestation. We find new kind of harmony. We find that the Spirit has gone before us. And even though we do not meet up with the same obstacles, they have come, but they have been met by this invisible consciousness of life. And you find your life without friction. You find you can move consciously in a new world. A world that looks the same to everyone else, but not to you. Your world is the world of life made manifest, the world of divine consciousness made manifest, and the world around you begins to sparkle with your new consciousness. You face things that life is unaware of. Human consciousness would be aware, but not life. And you face them easily and effortlessly. Because life, being the light, precedes you dissolving the darkness. Now let's look at our fears for a minute. Let's see exactly why we fear. Let's see if we can slow down the camera for a moment to analyze our fear. You have a condition that you find upsets you. Something you don't seem to be able to cope with. You can't figure out how it got there or what you're going to do to get rid of it. And sometimes it jeopardizes something about your life, either physically or socially or whatnot. And so you fear it. You fear that condition, that circumstance. Now let's stop, because the stimulus of fear isn't present at the moment, and let's look at it from an arm's distance. Something in you is afraid. What is it? And you can take this apart one by one. One of your five senses has to be reacting. And now another sense, and maybe a third. But let's look at this thing you fear and see if it isn't nothing more than a reaction of your senses. Look at each sense one at a time and discover which sense is really reacting the most. Is it a business condition? Which sense in you was involved then? It's a sense which ultimately touches at your concept of human life. And so it's your sight. It's your belief that in some way your status will be jeopardized, or a deeper innate belief that in some way you might even go hungry, or not have a house, or in some way be deprived of something material. At the back of every fear is that possibility of material loss, whether it be material loss of a person or an organ. Or a home, or a marriage, or a child. There's a material loss. You've accepted the reality of matter, and now instinctively you're accepting the possibility of the loss of that matter. Now, doesn't that make you wiser than God? While you're fearing, where is God? Why isn't God fearing or protecting you? Or removing this condition? Can it be because there is no such condition in God? There is no such condition in divine consciousness. But where is your consciousness? It isn't in the divine. And so you've got the condition which causes fear. There's your fear. Your consciousness is separated from the divine. There is no fear in God. Your fear is what you think is a thing, but it isn't a thing at all. Through your separation from divine consciousness, a belief has sprung up. And that belief is what you fear. If you were to change the belief, you wouldn't fear the thing. And the belief that must change is the belief that you are separated from God. Now repair that breach. See if, when you are not separated from God, you're capable of fear or a false belief. And you find it's impossible. Only in separation from God, by being in a limited human consciousness, do I fear. Do I see limitations? I'm walking on the ground in the jungle of world thought. The snake I fear on the ground, I don't fear it if I'm riding in an airplane, even though it's on the ground. All of the limitations I see in the jungle of world thought are on the level of my consciousness. But if I raise my consciousness, these same limitations and problems that I fear do not look the same again. They change their complexion. I walk into the sunshine and the shadows disappear. analyze anything you fear. Anything. There are no exceptions. You find you're fearing a condition that does not exist in divine consciousness. You're fearing it because you're not in a divine consciousness. You're in a human consciousness. But when you have lived with your everywhere self, which is the only begotten, which is pure spirit, which doesn't have horizons, which didn't begin 50 or 60 years ago, which doesn't end 20 or 30 years from now. When you have lived with that in consciousness, you will discover that the consciousness of your everywhere self is what stands where the world sees you, instead of a human consciousness. And that everywhere self is not afraid of the condition that you are afraid of in your human consciousness. There's a reason why it isn't afraid of that condition. It isn't seeing from the perspective of changing time. It isn't seeing from the perspective of five senses. It isn't seeing from the perspective of a material mind. It's seeing from the perspective of reality. It is seeing what is there. And you know what is there? Where you are suspecting and fearing a condition, do you know what is there? Not another person at all. Not another condition at all. All that is there where you are fearing another person or condition is your everywhere self. That's what is there. And it doesn't matter where you're looking or at whom. All that is there is your everywhere self. No one else is there. No one. That is the meaning of your everywhere self. It is the invisible child of God everywhere. And that is what you're looking at, but you're seeing something else which you fear. A warrior. A friend in pain. An automobile wreck. An airplane tumbling out of the sky, but none of them are there to your everywhere self. Because it is there. And the miracle is that you can live in the knowledge and consciousness of that everywhere self and know the reality of one being. When you are in that consciousness, then all of these temporary disturbances, imperfections, fears, conditions which are the separation from the one divine consciousness no longer are there. I, the one divine consciousness, perform and perfect all that concerneth thee. I go before thee. I make the crooked place straight. I set a table for thee in the wilderness of the human consciousness. I do the miracle. I am the resurrection. You find this I, infinite, divine, everywhere self of you, ever present, and when you stop to live in it, it takes you outside the belief of living within the restricted area of a human form. That's the purpose of the new baptism. Not on the west bank of the Jordan, but down in Judea. That's the purpose of the change over from one way of baptism to another. It's a change in consciousness. From the limited human consciousness to the unlimited divine consciousness in which there is no darkness at all. It wasn't done 2,000 years ago. It is the ever-present opportunity. It's a now opportunity. The old way, the letter of truth, the new way, the one invisible self. Now you have a person here and a person there. Get rid of it. There never were two persons. There was only one invisible self appearing as two persons. If you live in the two forms, in the belief in this form and that form, you're in a human selfhood. If you live in the consciousness of the one invisible self, it becomes the government of God unto you and the other form, and both are taken into the one light. One with God is a majority. Your consciousness of the invisible self behind the two forms or the 2 million forms is the acceptance of your everywhere self. You find your mind is a bystander when you go into this awareness. You take the government right out of your mind. It has no more power to tyrannize you or terrorize you or in any way misrepresent, because the new witness within you is Christ. The witness of the divine kingdom on earth is your everywhere self, Christ. Let's not be guided by our limited mentalities anymore, but as instruments for the infinite self, we are learning that because the divine is all and is perfect, nothing exists but the perfect divine kingdom on earth now. That's all that's here. Perfection everywhere. Only limited human consciousness can see otherwise. And it is far more rewarding to suffer through a lapse in consciousness, but to be unwavering, than to take arms against a sea of troubles and oppose them. We rest in that one infinite, invisible, divine self and trust it. We're building our trust in it, in its presence, in its power, in its glory, in its truth. And there is no power on the earth for us. Only the power of the one perfect invisible self. Now this is the birth of the mystical consciousness in us. A realm that knows neither fire nor flood. A realm that has no fear. A realm that is without conditions, because there are no conditions in God. Therefore, every condition that appears to you is but a statement that you're looking from the limitation of a human consciousness. You have fallen down to a human consciousness. But awaken. Pick up thy bed. Look at this, which appears to be conditioned, limited, and ask yourself, what is the truth of it? Why do I believe it's there? God is doing nothing about it. Why do I believe that it's there if God doesn't? Do I know more than God? Do I know more than the infinite mind? Or am I simply as separated from the infinite mind as that condition itself over there is separated? Shall both of us be separated? Or shall one be reunited with Source and rest in total trust that when I am reunited in Source, there's nothing for me to do, for the testimony will now come from Christ within. And that testimony will be, I know thee who thou art. I don't have to improve you or change you. Christ in me is the witness of your reality as the everywhere self. Now it should be clear to us then, everywhere self means Christ. Omnipresent is your being. And we're taking it out of the terminologies of religion simply because you may be able to identify with it better in the terminology everywhere self. It says something perhaps that the word Christ doesn't say to you, but they're identical. Omnipresence is another. But everywhere means there's no place where yourself is not. And if you think there is a place where yourself is not, you are divided from the divine consciousness. That's the Achilles heel we all have suffered from. That's where the arrow comes with the poison. Every time we're divided from that infinite self of our own being, we've got a little vulnerable spot. And the whole world pops right in there and presents its lies to us. Now, there's only one lie in this whole world. It's the belief that God has an opposite. That there is something that is not divine. And there isn't. Whatever you see that's not divine, it simply isn't there. You may not like the way it looks, or you may like the way it looks, but if it isn't divine, it's not there. It's only mental energy appearing as. And if you are in the consciousness of the one self, the one divine life, my everywhere self, you will find you have the capacity to look at that which is good or bad to human consciousness and know that where it appears to be, only the everywhere self is. That's the beginning of real love, real grace, real power, real wisdom, undivided from Source. It's the beginning of being a child in spirit, being reborn to reality. It's the beginning of stepping out of limited, separated time intervals of life in form. We're restoring ourselves to the One. Some of you have told me that in your brief abiding in the everywhere idea of self, without having put it in words, perhaps, you have said that you have stepped out of form. And you've done this effortlessly. You've literally stepped out of the belief in form. Don't step back in and say, it hurts now in my kneecap, or I got a sore toe. But rather, that which my senses are reporting cannot be the truth. And why should I be governed by a lie? Until the true incorporeality of your nature becomes your everyday consciousness, from this comes the one power functioning as yourself. You no longer need to seek a power. Your life is the power. You don't have to seek intelligence. Your life is the intelligence. All of the seeking and striving and asking becomes past history. There's nothing to seek for, to strive for, to ask for. The self of you is all that. It has meat the world knows not of. It lives by its own self-fulfilling action. It is grace.